some customers in the same area. So the multi-cultural supply to alcohol in the project. From that point, going to different houses, there are different things for all the church, traditional terms can do that. The second part is the issue of urban migration. This relates to where most people are relocating from outside urban areas into your city centers, so your big cities, Joburg, Victoria, even Cape Town. So all of this is increasing electricity demand from those particular areas. You do get incentives where it costs either the municipality or the home is not quick enough to connect to those customers. They resort to a bigger connection. In other instances, this will lead to networks being overloaded, and parallel to that, revenue loss for both Eskom and municipality. The third aspect of the changing landscape is embedded generation. This, of course, is when end user customers opt to have their own power generation instead of purchasing from either Eskom or from others. And this would lead to a reduced revenue share in the distribution. What then happens is that most of the municipalities, especially, rely on the electricity revenue to sustain their business model. They would then want to counter that by increasing tariffs and say this is not sustainable in any distribution area. So we need to be aware of the impact that the embedded generation could have on the municipal basis. The last aspect, Chair, which is also somewhat related to reduce revenue for the municipality, relates to energy switching. This is typically when you get, especially on the high-end customers, where they switch space heating and cooking from electricity to, for example, gas. So they would use gas for cooking and gas to warm up. This results to reduce electricity consumption volume. And the third part is that this reduction comes from normally your customers that are high-end and that are paying for their electricity. So the municipality to balance that and then increase the tariff and say this is unsustainable. So these four areas here, this is for us the landscape that is changing, and we believe that it requires further detailed discussion for the community. We are aware of certain issues that are of immediate concern for both Eskom and the municipality, but we are saying going forward needs to be able to address all the issues in order for the distribution sector to be sustainable. Chair, the overview of the challenges that we have noted. I think at the top, right at the top, you have the issue of questions around the role of Eskom and distributors. So the role of Eskom and municipalities as distributors of electricity. And this comes from section 156 of the Constitution, where it provides for municipalities to do electricity regulation, and it doesn't say anything about Eskom being able to do the same. This has been an issue of discussion between ourselves, Eskom, Salga, and COFTA, preventing municipalities. Most municipalities view this as their constitutional strength. And there are questions around the process that NERSA would follow, especially to license Eskom in areas where municipalities believe they should be the ones to make decisions. Municipalities are proposing that, or are requesting that Eskom in areas that they say must enter into service delivery agreements. And this would serve quite a number of purposes. for example, one of them being the ability to be able to do credit control using the CPT as a tool. So where an end user is owing rate and taxes, for example, the municipality wants to be able to request a stop to the service level of service delivery agreement to switch on and off. As I indicated, the municipalities are questioning the process and have support in issuing a license to them. There is also an indication from SAUGA that we are representing the municipality that both municipalities see themselves play a role in the generation of electricity. There have been some municipalities that have started a process to try and get their own electricity generation. We have an issue that our minister has started to court where the challenge on the process, the national planning process, versus the municipal planning process in relation to the but I won't go into those details, I'll leave the discussion. There is lack of parity between ESCOM and municipal areas of supply. So, for instance, you find that in other instances, the boundary between municipal and ESCOM is so close to each other, but the tariffs are vastly different. There have been complaints that most of the time you find that either ESCOM or municipality is charging the lower than where in the other instance, the tariff is higher than what they have done. But globally, the tariffs are not good. If you're in an airport area, you pay a different tariff. If you're in a different tariff, you pay a different tariff. There are other issues with the general members, which is the debt that is owed to ESCOM by the company. There is a committee chair. That has been formed to address the issue of the day. We understand that there were arrangements made about 60 or so municipalities so that a firm can then build from switching those costs. But from those 60, approximately 40 have defaulted to the arrangement that was used. But as I said, the issue is in. Which is led by the one point they try to emphasize on the INTT led by Coxa made a presentation to the Presidential Coordinating Committee in 2 weeks ago. And Coxa was then indicated that needs to be all institutions and they go to the CCP with the recommendation. On how we saw a project so these are the challenges the last slide is chair on the challenges. The huge underinvestment. The chair, this comes from the side of however, Chair, we are sitting now today in the back of the investment to maintain the refurbishment of the same issue. Firstly, you maintain the training that then you need to refurbish. But both of these are not happening at the distribution infrastructure level. The shortage of skills, largely in municipal served areas, people are moving from those municipalities into the entertainment industry. The last electoral chair, which is linked to the maintenance of some of the municipalities, is the low revenue collection. So So we find that municipalities are not collecting all the revenue that is suitable. And for various reasons, how they spend a lot of time. So we need to be careful as to what is the problem. I will go into the collaboration that the board is currently involved in. The first one, Chair, in the amendments to Schedule 2 of the electricity regulation. I will try and summarize the slide because it's quite a lot of text, but I don't remember the this, Chair, relates to an increasing number of applications that we have received on the small scale. And the request for this line is limited to those generators that are less than 1 megawatt. And the request was that they need an extension so that we can put up all the PV, mostly PV, plants on the rooftop without necessarily having to apply for the extension like the through the network. We then took time as the department. And we are pleased to announce to the Chair that the notice has been approved, and we are now in the process of publicizing this notice. We are all generators that are not at all. What we are proposing is that they only need to register. ERSA would be then dedicated to the CNC and management of the position. So it was approved at the end of October. But this only applies to potential, it only applies to less than 1 megawatt. The second duty that we do. Over 7 million households in the electrification. And we obviously have annual targets for the electrification. The current target, whether we have to 2019, we're expecting to electrify 1.25 million. So, what in all, we're expecting to have electrified about 26 million connections. This program, Chair, is funded through the system. Department in applications on an annual basis, then transfer to ESCOM and various municipalities. And the projects are implemented either at ESCOM level, where ESCOM is the source, or at municipal level. There are challenges on this one, even though we don't talk about the other programs. Slide is just the numbers in terms of the allocation to 2019. So the additional 1.25 megawatts is the number of the challenge is without spending too much time on the slide. We have, this program has been running since 1994. Quite clear to us what needs to be done to improve performance. One of the main issues is the lack of human capacity in both municipalities. Because of that, they tend to rely on consultants. They tend to rely on consultants for the design of the function of the network. They rely on consultants for designing of the program for their own electrification. And they outsource the electronic implementation. The trend that we have seen is that even those consultants have been sourced with the same company. Of course, the consent for us, we are proposing that we put provincial software and municipalities need to improve our project plan. And this chair is to ensure that first new wind power in the country. And secondly, the same providers are getting more. The scope is very important in terms of the situation. Thank you. The second problem, sorry, the third one here is the energy efficiency demand side management. This program is also funded from the program. The Schedule 5D, that's the Division of Revenue Act. What the program is to change, we provide funds to various municipalities in order for them to change the old type of high energy consuming appliances, street kind of smart water pumps, water facilities, to make those energy efficient. But what then happens is if they are not efficient, they pay more because their energy bills are higher. Pay more to people to so by making them more efficient, we are giving them money to reduce the energy cost that they can. The slide indicates the type of technology. So now we are focusing on, as I indicated, the traffic signals, the green light, high mass light, generation and water service plan. This is the allocation for the energy efficiency 2017-18. So you can see the amount that is allocated in the various municipalities. The fourth one here relates to what we refer to as approach to distribution asset management. This chair will give a summary relationship to the assets that are owned and controlled in both municipalities and the distribution level. So this would be your overhead cables, your underground cables, your transformers, all the assets that they need in that sector to be able to deliver the chip. We did a study in 2008. This was through the high volume when it was filling in. And the outcome of that report, Chair, was that the level of maintenance of assets is to be shifted. And of course, as with any asset, if you don't maintain it properly, firstly, you reduce the lifespan of the asset, secondly, it becomes very unreliable, it can break any time. And this will affect. When EDI Holdings Chair was closed in the cabinet to get decision around 2010 to stop the EDI Holdings process, there was an amount that was left in EDI Holdings for this project. About 320 million of the event project to do what we refer to as a mini Adam project. The objective of this program, Chair, was to say we have a 27 million lack of maintenance program. How do we then put together a program that will be at a pilot scale that we can demonstrate how to implement others going forward? The 320 million was put aside and these are the municipalities that we have. All the projects are complete except for one in Ruby, which is at 98%. That this was the allocation was made as a conditional grant. And of course, as with any other grant, the department merely receives the funds and is transferred to the other. So it depends on the municipality to do the job and support here. However, we have experience that the project plan is municipal level was very poor, such that we do not rely on the initial commitment that we have to us. The second part, which is the experience that comes from the mini Adam, is that at a municipal level, undertaking and enforcement of contracts is also not good. We find the providers that get appointed to do certain things, but there is no repercussion if they want to. So, using the lessons learned from many others, Ranges between Of the model that you can propose, I will throw on the slide. There are currently two blocks in the main. So this focus is only in the current. Because we believe that as comes for S comes for S5, S comes the same about NGC and S is a different approach. If S comes legal assistance, that most of these is fund social infrastructure. And if you think too much on that aspect, then social infrastructure will come. If you take too much out of the government transfer income, the effort of the incentive, the infrastructure maintenance, you find that your social infrastructure will come. So our focus here moves to the asking a question, how do we then enhance the revenue that the municipality can generate in order for them to maintain? So we are proposing right at the top chain that we want to create what we refer to as a national bank. So this will be an account that is consolidated at national bank. And let's say the reason why we propose a national bank. The next step to that is that then go to the each utility that we participate on this program. At the utility level, we say we want to assist you to approach commercial lenders. And this can include your DFIs or your normal banks. What the lenders are asking for is that they need to be guaranteed against the intake. That blue line says the guarantee come from the sales related sector for the first one. It might not be adequate in all instances, but this is a fact. So we are saying as part of your GCT thing, you need to reinforce some of that revenue will go towards repayment. And what we are asking for, Chair, is already provided to the tariff of 4.5%. They give a 5 to 8% that's already included in the tariff that we are coming to. So we are saying that 5 to 8% must be the one that is targeted to repay the loan that we would have raised with the essential of national to provide that. So this is the model that we are proposing. Create the national market in the top, then a few individual municipalities to borrow money. The guarantee that the municipality must provide in relation to the 5 to 8% that has been approved by. So we are proposing this charging model to propose first in the national, because then we are easy to collate all the funds and put them at the national 1.81. So where the base can control, the control of the output. Secondly, the projects that are deployed, we will make sure that those municipalities that need assistance will still do not help them from like certain service providers that are saying that should not be done. So at national level, we aim to control the flow of the funding as well as make sure that as we implement these projects, so this is the proposed funding model. The next step in relation to Adam, we want to finalize the funding model and obtain the necessary support in Africa. And this would drive spending on the border state. We have identified a certain key holder. For the same committee that you are proposing. Okay, the next intervention by GMT is what we refer to as the smart grid. This was a pilot project which was funded by UNA funds from the European Union. The objective of this was to develop a national smart grid policy. Members might be aware that there has been started by a couple of measures trying to implement smart grids in their respective areas. But these have been troublesome. And one of the reasons is that there is currently no national policy on smart grid. So the pilot objective was difficult to develop a national policy. It focused on four key main areas, but I must highlight here that the second one, which I'm now putting in terms of the enhanced revenue management. The experience here, because we started the project about 3 years ago, our experience is that by doing the right stuff, in other words, by making sure that various instances they calculate their tariffs correctly, and they install metering points where they should be metered, they are able to improve the revenue that they collect from the end user. Some of them have channels that improve the revenue into setting or reducing the debt that they owe to them. So this program has joined focus on other areas. One of the immediate benefits is that those municipalities, for example, those 60 municipalities, if we implement what we propose in the past, we are able to improve their revenue collection and pay extra to accepting the export. But the policy is in four programs. The first one is to see the test power generation. The second one is to explain the enhanced revenue elimination. This will deal with these aspects of test. So with smart meters, we are able to program on a monthly basis, the basis. So for those indigent households that qualify, that is able to automatically, without any human intervention, to send 15 kilowatt-hours at the beginning of each month. We are able to keep the correct tariff so that we don't, because as a municipality, you program and incorrect tariff, you end up subsidizing the head. ESCO will make sure that the tariff they charge, the tariff that enables them to cover their costs and make some Starbucks, so I would go very quickly over there, so that you can save a bit of time. Change for step of by the nature of the industry, which has been covered. That's from for two licenses, generation, transmission, and distribution. And then we've got strategic and support services that actually support those businesses, from finance to HR to our IT systems to legal and procurement. Ayanda will also share our view in terms of the licensing process, which we believe that the Constitution makes provision for other electricity distributors in addition to municipalities. The Constitution is very clear that distribution is not exclusive to municipalities. So as Eskom will review that in areas where there's other service providers that could have value, they've got a space to play. I will go very quickly on this one. This is just the value chain, the wire business, how the electricity flows from the power stations all the way to the service connection to the house at the end. An overview of the Eskom distribution business chain. Our main role is to service our customers, to building and operating distribution assets, acting in the national interest, and partnering with the other distributors like our municipalities, and enhancing stakeholders. Some statistics around our asset base in terms of kilometers of line at the different voltages, some organizational structure on the right. We've just gone over 6 million customers, direct customers of Eskom, 9 operating units, so we've got a presence and a provincial office in each province, just over 15,000 employees, and over 300 customer network centers, which is our building block, what we used to call depots in the old terminology. Some highlights, you would see, I will give a graph in terms of our performance, technical performance, which is improving. We're building and strengthening our network, and I will share some of those, both for our own customer base, but also an increased connection of IPPs and new generators. Industrial skill development, support of learnerships. Every year we absorb in excess of 2,000 new learners into Eskom, which we train for both our own use but also for the use of the industry at large. And then partnering with the distributors within the industry. For instance, we collaborate with municipalities where we share database of our spares, and if there's major interruptions, we actually collaborate in the storage of power irrespective of where the fault is, and then behind the scenes we sort out in terms of flow of assets or skills. But we look at the industry as a joint responsibility for all the members. Some challenges. Safety is always a big one for us, because of the dangerous nature of electricity. Energy theft is still a problem. I'm sure we're aware, for instance, of the cable stolen in Johannesburg in the underground tunnels that have resulted in parts of Joburg, the CBD, being without electricity for a few days. So energy theft is still a problem that as an industry we're facing. Energy losses in terms of theft, up
related to sustain technical performance and also identifying opportunities to extract efficiencies from our operations. On the capital side, Chairperson, our investment over the 5 years, we prioritize using those three key building blocks. First of all, reducing the investment backlog. The license condition is such that as a distributor, we should invest in excess of 6% of our revenue in actually maintaining, refurbishing and strengthening the network. We prioritize refurbishment and strengthening. I think Department of Energy has alluded to the fact that our average age is about 40 years, so most of the equipment is now requiring refurbishments in mid-life, and then building new networks to connect new customers. Electrification is gaining momentum. On the ESCOM side, we have to view that we can achieve universal access by 2020. We're connecting in excess of 200,000 new electrification connections every year. That's on the ESCOM side. So there's a lot of customers coming on stream that we have to connect and create a new infrastructure. And how we prioritize, as I said, in accordance to sustaining the network, complying with the regulatory and license conditions, which I've alluded to, and also satisfying the demand growth. Before I go to the next slide, Chair, just some comments on the expenditure. I regret that as ESCOM and the Department of Energy weren't focused on the AGAM funding, but it's important to put it on record that as ESCOM, we do not necessarily support a separate funding for strengthening, refurbishing and maintenance. Electricity is a viable business, and as distributors, we are expected to look after the infrastructure, and we do not believe that we need national treasury to pump new money and get loans and guarantees for that. You know, we take it up again with DOE. In fact, if I then go to the next slide, this is the kind of investment that ESCOM has been making in this area. You see from 13-14 financial year, about 7.5 billion rand. In 17-18, we are at 5.7 billion investment and picking up to about 9.8 billion by 2021. For us, it's just a question of efficiencies, working smarter, and making sure that we protect infrastructure, because that's the one that actually gives us the revenues. In fact, we believe that the ESCOM should be looking at reducing our reliance on the fiscal and even on government guarantees so that we can actually run business as a standalone business. So on the right-hand side, 2017 onwards, investment to target on aging in the networks, as I said, and then strengthening for future existing infrastructure. The next slide, Chair, is our electrification program, starting in 1994. When we started on it, we had the shareholder compact to electrify 1.75 million customers between 1994 and 2000, which target we actually exceeded. And you see in the first block, that was when ESCOM was running under a contract with the Department of Energy. From around 2000, the program was then funded by government where we get the funding from the fiscus, and we've been continuing in that trend. And right at the end, you'll see that last year we connected 207,000 new electrification customers, and we're planning to connect in the region of 200,000 every year, with the hope that by 2020 on the Eskom license areas, as I said, we should actually achieve our universal access, meaning 100% coverage of our areas of supply. At the bottom is the cost per connection. You'll see that as we go into deep rural areas and as we need to build new infrastructure, new lines and new substations, our cost per connection is climbing. However, it's one of our objectives to always look at opportunities to work more efficiently so that our money can reach even more customers. Maintenance philosophy. Our maintenance regime is both preventative and corrective. Preventative, of course, forward-looking, and corrective once you get breakdowns of the system. And the preventative maintenance is basically governed by regulatory and statutory requirements. I've mentioned that, mainly safety, health, and environment. We also want our networks to perform according to the design limit of the equipment. And we also want that we actually maximize the life of the equipment, which is why we have to maintain it to make sure that it lasts for the design life that it was meant to. And then we also do some life extensions at the end in terms of refurbishment to get more mileage out of it. Some chairperson on the technical performance of the networks. The first one is the system average incident duration index. So if you just focus on the key, that's the duration. So on average, a customer per annum would be without supply for those hours. You see that we started at 42.6 hours per annum, and we're currently in the region of 38. And we're planning to maintain it at that level of 38, 39 hours per annum. This must be read with the understanding that we're building new infrastructure, we're adding more rural customers and new electrification, which means lines are longer, there's more exposure, and therefore more incidents. But even with the addition and growth of the network, we don't want the technical performance on the duration of incidents to actually get worse. So we actually kept it at the current standard. On SIFI, which is your frequency, so that's the number of times a customer is without electricity, so it's not the duration, it's just the number of interruptions. You see that in 2011, we were sitting at around 22 times. Right now, we're sitting at less than 20. And again, despite huge electrification extensions, we've kept the performance to be within 20 incidents per annum per customer. And this is, of course, in line with our license conditions for the technical performance. And that takes me to my colleague, as I said, it will be a charge there.
Honourable Chairman, before I go to, am I allowed to present from where I am? Because we have to make the closing remarks, so call Chairman. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman, and good morning to you. Good morning to the GM, to the Honourable Members of the Committee. And also to the colleagues from the industry, from DOE, NASA, and of course our shareholder, Kenneth Forbetta, seeing that she's also here to represent our minister. Thank you very much. What I'd like to do is really just to very quickly and briefly take you through the customer services side of the business and also mention a little bit about the area of supply that Mr. Sogolo referred to. It also has been somewhat covered by the DOE presentation, so I'm not going to take too much time except to just highlight a couple of points here. Now, if you look at the customer business, the customer services business, we operate under the license of distribution, so in other words, we don't have a license of our own. And our primary role really is just to connect, to collect, and to delight customers. So in a very simple way of remembering what customer services is about in Eskom, that is really what it's about. We have, Shegazi, if you can move to the next slide, we have jumped on 6 million customers. A bulk of those customers are prepaid customers. They are mostly residential. We have commercial, we have industrial, mining, and agricultural industries. Municipalities have been mentioned earlier that they are 42% of our sales. And the top customers, in other words, your industrial and mining, would then be 38% of our sales. And then 41% of our revenue comes from the municipalities, and hence it becomes very important that they pay their bills. In terms of the infrastructure of customer services, we have a number of employees who are servicing the customer to make sure that we can connect, we can collect, and also delight our customers. We have 7 contact centers across the country. You will not experience the 7 contact centers because we are operating in a virtual mode. So in other words, if you phone the if you phone our contact center, you will be responded to by any available agent who might be sitting in Polokwane if you are calling from Cape Town, or they might be sitting in East London or Johannesburg. So we operate in a virtual mode. However, we also have 88 walk-in centers, or hubs, as we call them internally. We also have electronic access for customers to contact us. So you can send us an email, you can fax to us, you can go to the website, and so forth. Moving on a bit, I'm not going to dwell too much into the challenges that we have. You will recall that we made, the next slide is fine. If you look at our annual results, as at the 31st of March this year, we made just on 125 billion rand on 214 terawatt hours of energy that we sold to our customers. One of the challenges, as you know, is that our sales growth is flat, and we actually had a slight reduction in sales. So some of the recommendations and issues that have been raised by the DOE presentation actually talk to some of the challenges that we're experiencing from a sales point of view. Let's move on to the unit debt, because that is an area of great, great concern to us. You can see on the graph that over the years, the debt is really climbing in a very unsustainable way, where you see that we have, to some extent, managed to bring the debt down is when we implemented the charger process. Now, you'll recall that in December last year, we had a challenge with climbing debt, and we implemented the charger process. In other words, we interrupted the customers, the municipalities, from 6 in the morning to about 8 in the morning, and then also in the evening, we have an evening shift that we do. These interruptions, again, are not are the last resort. You know, we continue with the negotiations with the customers. We try to engage and find amicable solutions. But unfortunately, we find that in some cases, especially where we have payment arrangements, which have also been mentioned in the previous presentation, is that Though some of the payment arrangements are not honored, others are partially honored. So partially honored is, you know, paying some months and not paying in others, or you do pay consistently but you short pay in terms of the agreement. We had at the end of May this year, we had about 62 payment arrangements that were signed. Of those, only 20 were fully honored, and the others were either partially honored or not honored at all. So that is a challenge that we face. Tomorrow, I may as well mention it, it is in the presentation, we are going to be instituting interruptions in the Eastern Cape. I have asked the team, however, to try and, you know, do some very tough negotiations during the course of the day, as we have done in the last couple of days. And we are hoping that we'll come up with a positive solution. Unfortunately, if that doesn't happen, we will have to continue with the interruption. If I move on to the next slide, just to talk to some of the challenges that the municipalities have cited, the skills has already been mentioned as an area. In some municipalities, we find that there are huge vacancies. There is a churning of very skilled resources. Just the other day, as part of my contribution to getting the municipalities to pay, I called two municipal managers in the Eastern Cape and just reminded them that we are getting closer to that date. Is there anything that we can do? And I think two of them both gave me new people that I was supposed to talk to because of the changes in the personnel at the municipality. The other one is the losses. The revenue management side, part of what we have done is the research to try and assist the municipalities is to actually go and look at their infrastructure, see what some of the challenges are, and we have found that in some cases they don't have metering, in other cases there's illegal collections, and in others there's also just general theft, or their equipment is actually not working anymore, and therefore they are unable to properly build, and therefore are unable to collect. And then the issue of tariffs has also been raised as a concern with some of the municipalities. Moving on to what we have also been asked by the municipalities is a number of concessions. The municipalities also approached us together with SAUGA to say, is there anything else that we can do to assist them in reducing the debt? And one of the things they asked for was the rationalization of the municipality tariff. Initially, we had about 11 options, and we found that the rural municipalities were actually the ones that were struggling the most in terms of the number of tariffs that we have. And we subsequently reduced them to 3, so they have an option to choose from that. The second concession that they requested was that we reduce the interest rate, the penalty that we charge when they don't pay on time. Initially, we charged them time plus 5%, and the rationale really for it was that we were trying to discourage our customers from not paying the bill on time, and therefore try to make it unfavorable for them to pay late. And they said to us, it actually does kill them, and can we at least reduce the fine at the length, the interest rate will reduce it to prime plus 2.5%. So this is where we are at the moment. The third thing that the municipalities asked for was that because they have other customers that they need to collect from, it takes them about 30 days to collect from the other customers, they would like us to move from 15 days to 30 days to align with their days, and that concession has also been approved. The fourth one, which was approved by the board, is the payment, the allocation of the payment first to the capital and then the balance of interest. Now you will know that generally when you have a loan, the money is allocated, even if you have your bond or your car, the first allocation will go to interest and then the balance, whatever it is, will then go to capital. And now what we have done is to reverse the cycle. And this has been implemented from the 1st of July this year. We haven't yet assessed the impact. We still need to see a couple of months to see whether the municipalities are going to react or respond favorably to this. And then the last one is still under consideration by the board. Basically what the municipalities are asking for is that if they have to upgrade for any other reason, usually from an ESCOM point of view, our policy is that they have to pay for the connection charge upfront. And what they have asked is that we allow them to pay for the fee, for the connection fee over 20 years and instead of the cash upfront, because a lot of times they actually don't have the money upfront. So that is still under consideration and we will revert to the municipality at the right time. And moving on to the next lot, which really talks to the two shares in the industry. These are the issues around the licensing of the two key players in the distribution industry. As it has already been mentioned, ESCOM and the municipalities are the two main players in the industry. And with ESCOM, you may know that historically we've supplied in all the areas that have not necessarily been supplied by the municipality. And what we have also found is that with, over the years, there has been some rezoning that has happened in the rural area that we have had as ESCOM. And consequently, those areas, when they are rezoned, they automatically become our ESCOM customers. And therefore, you find that there's always an overlap between the customers that are with ESCOM and the customers that are supplied by the municipality. Moving on to the next slide, you will see that there are three main pieces of legislation which are really critical in the licensing of the two entities or the two players. We do have the constitution, which is currently the issue that the municipalities are raising, and believing that it gives them the sole executive authority to regulate. And then we've got, of course, the ERA, which is the one that we get our license by, with LESA being the licensor of the different distributors. And then we've got the Municipal Systems Act and also the Municipal Structures Act, which we have to look at the same time. Now, the area of contention, moving on, has already been mentioned that from the interpretation of the municipality, they believe that they have the sole right to reticulate, and therefore, in areas where we are reticulating, they believe that we should have a service delivery agreement. And from an ESCOM point of view, we believe that they do not have an exclusive executive authority, or they are not exclusive executive authority, and we therefore need not sign a service delivery agreement. However, it is important that we converge in terms of the service standards and how we treat our customers and how we align on service delivery issues in general. And it has been mentioned that these issues are dealt with through the interministerial task team, which is led by the Minister of Culture, and there have been a number of engagements on this matter to get to the resolution. Moving on to the next slide, really we talk to what I've already said. All I want to amplify there is that from an ESCOM point of view, we do have a license to distribute, and therefore we get the authority of what we're doing from the license that we've given to us. I would like to leave it at this point and get Ntsikazi to just talk to the committee on what are the other things that we're doing to make sure that the industry continues to function in the absence of some clarity on the issue. Thank you, Chairman.
That as ESCOM, we will continue to respond to the changes in the social, economic, and political environment. And that in reference to our operational performance, we are collaborating with all the stakeholders that we demonstrated throughout the industry while leveraging our stakeholders and the active partnering with our distributors and that customer.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and to all the members, and thank you for the invitation. I just want to introduce myself. I think this is my first appearance before the committee, and I want to take a short look at each other, and I think we need to speak for some reason. I'm a bit of a cold. Currently set at a staff complement of about 246 principle that we do all of our work by, you know, everything's got to comply to the law, and then our decisions can be reviewed and appealed through the High Court. Transparency is very important in terms of the way we make our decisions and how we consult. It's important that we make neutral decisions, quite obviously considering the interests that we need to look after, that we're consistent in whatever we do, that is independent, and we are accountable. And where we see that sometimes we make decisions or put methodologies in place that need improvement or to close gaps, etc., then we do that. And then I'm going to hand over to my colleague, to the powers and duties of the energy regulator. So Section 4 of the Energy Regulator Act, really, Electricity Regulation Act, really outlines the mandate of the regulator in terms of electricity. And we talk about licensing and registering generators, distributors, including municipalities, traders, and importers and exporters. And then within that, regulating prices and tariffs. And then an important aspect that I think across the board at the regulator is the thing about compliance with license conditions, and that's becoming much more of a focus of what we do as we go forward. And then issuing rules designed to implement government policy, electricity policy framework, and the IRP, as well as the Electricity Regulation Act, and then establishing and managing information systems and systems to monitor compliance and performance, enforce that performance and compliance, and then also to do mediation between licensees and consumers, and then we're doing investigations and support for that. And then I'm going to hand over to you.
Chair, some of the issues that I'm going to present to come ahead with the next point today, like the structure of the industry, that's how it is. But on this side, I just want to point out that let's cover the distribution license. Some of the challenges of the municipalities that are in the very important. That's a very change. I'll go to the municipal certification process, Chair. Chair, with the municipalities, we apply every year, unlike ESCO, where we've got a multi-year certification. So with the municipalities, we have to start with the municipalities. So the whole idea is the same policy procedure. So if I had a book of each distributor, the process that we have to follow, Chair, is that we have to, by the 15th of March, have finalized the application for the municipal application. And then we get, by the 15th of March, we also get a guarantee that we much more information by the minister. Because sometimes we find that ESCOM applies late, all the municipalities are each other, so we have yet to get that by the 15th of March. Process, Chair, is then dependent on the ESCOM price interest. So we have to start with that. So I think that we must find that. I'm going to know that the municipalities buy their power from the so we have to start with the ESCOM price interest, and then from there we can change the interest of the now, once we get that price interest from ESCOM, we do what we call better interest. And the license is there to apply for approval, which is besides the fact that we turn it to guideline entry. Like this year, guideline entry is a wonderful thing to say. But that didn't mean that the charity is to take your license to take it like that. We still have to look at the application. The information that we get from the municipality depends on the these are the forms that tell us exactly what the cost of the policies are, and from that we then use that information to review the application. So some of the things that are in the benchmark, Chair, take into consideration information on potential publicly from the National Treasury, together with competitions of other players in Kenya, that's where the expenses that we spend from the house purchases from Eskom. That again goes back to that price that we buy from Eskom. Also, we are reasonable energy losses for parties, what they have to spend on the pay maintenance, capital charges, where they have to borrow money, and other ways. This is what leads us to the guidelines. For the current year, that's the 80.88. It was based on the fact that the interest for them, from the Eskom, was going to be the Eskom to the 2.2. Now, the other interest is just going to your system to the kind of tax application. These are the guidelines. But as I said, it doesn't mean that they should follow platforms. You still have to look at the infrastructure and make sure that they have the building of what they need. The guideline interest for that is the kind of determination to apply. And only review what application. We look at the current infrastructure structure level. We look at the comparison to the NERSAT benchmark, and we look at the efficiency of the operator, that is their technical and financial benchmark, that is the last one, to make sure that whatever they get as a revenue, this location is one of the most cost and efficiency. Also look at the level of cost of efficiency, and any problems that the municipalities may be involved, like in infrastructure, for instance, with the guideline increases that 1.8%, we can come and ask for 2.8%. We give them an extra percentage. So they've got a special project in terms of which they want to refurbish the infrastructure. So that's going to be one form. But those revenues generally require that they have to be different so that we can report them only when they are quiet. So that we can still have an idea what is the project value. The source of information which has that is the distribution form. This distribution form that got to be seen by the 31st of October every year. And these cover the income statement of the units, human resources, information, sector information, tariff information, market information. The information is used by architect to assess the kitchen. And all the tariffs that are approved by NERSA are posted on the NERSA website. I have to make sure that I address the issue of the 6%. That is, I would say that. So the ring fence business, 6% of their electricity revenue should go towards the parent and maintenance. That is what we are doing at NERSA, making sure that we've got the funding. But what we do find out is that most of the time, most municipalities will say that for 6%. And it's something that we will need to remind them. That they've got to do that to make sure that the security of supply. This is just the technical code of process in previous. The challenge is that we are facing, first of all, is that very difficult for us to meet our 15th of March date. That is, by the 15th of March, all the challenges have been approved. Because, as I said, sometimes if the meeting for next month late, then everything depends on the application. All the municipalities themselves are required. And most of the time, they apply after the grant. They know that they need to pay, but the application to find them, they find that they come to after the grant, which makes for us very difficult to meet 15. And we have now to approach every year the National Treasury and the Minister to make sure that we get that. Authorization to do this by the end of June to meet the standard. So some of the defaults that are submitted by the municipality are late. As I said, they should begin by the end of October, but sometimes they're later than that. The other problem, Chair, is the integrity of the information is left for the municipality. We find that they don't have the necessary skills or capacity to compile information that they need for the purpose of the application. The inaccuracy in the data meaning that now the process takes for us analyze comes a little bit longer because analysts now have got to be a little for us to change them. Analysts can go with the process for them to clarify issues of different work. It's also a high staff to know method and practice. And that results in them not being able to do certain things like we cannot do service design appropriately. And if they can't do that, that can lead to high expensive charges and penalties for people. And that would also contribute to the higher expenses. When we looked at the Eskom picture, we found that besides the energy charges, the municipalities are paying a lot for interest. And then maybe that person will touch on that. And the fact that they can reduce that interest effectively. Probably climate, it's a step in the right direction. And also, we found that within the notified reform demand, we don't have the capacity to structure that charge in such a way that they avoid those charges. So there's a lot that has to be done. We're also happy to hear that ESCOM is working with them to minimize the number of charges coming to the policy. The high signal losses we come from things like 40 meters or 97 meters of quality maintained better. So the picture we get from the municipality is the last picture. We have to all these problems. We have really been concentrating a lot on the supply side of the business. We right now have to talk about distribution because the goal is for us to have an excess capacity. I can't even get to the end because of the problems I have. The last thing we want to talk about is the fact that when it comes to tariff approval, we only get a problem in this side. Some of the municipalities believe that the council has to decide on tariffs. Because if the council has put together a budget, and when they put together that budget, we make an assumption as to what the tariff is going to be. So when we tell them that, no, you can't do that, then we still don't understand that. So we have to keep them all the time telling them that according to the ERA, we are going to have to decide on time. They have just to recommend that they are going to be responding to the issues we check. They will give it to them. But that they deserve telling them how efficient they are. Challenges continue, Chair. Now, to mitigate the challenges that we have, Chair, with the municipality, we always go out, that is my people, that is my engineers, we go out to the municipality and kind of conduct workshops with them on how to be different, put together the tariff application and to make sure that that is, so that we can make sure that we are. Now, the challenge here, Jay, is that, yes, we do that almost every year, but we find that the turnover staff in the municipality is high to such an extent that maybe this year we achieve some people, and then only a year after 2 years, those people are no longer there. So we have to start a section. We also collect audit checks on all the municipalities so that we make sure that they operate efficiently and that the cost of supply is reduced. We've got 12 analysts here that do all this work. For each section, we've divided the country into six areas. Two analysts here, one four analysts, and two analysts. And these people, when it comes to the time when we have to everybody agrees their application, we make sure that most of their time is spent on the territory, hoping that during that time, we don't have any contact and so on. Moving to from but before I can move from this, the tariffs that we approach here are on the international website for each and every region. So everybody in the room can go to the website and check what tariffs apply to themselves in that region. And we really ask people to do that because sometimes find that some municipalities don't implement the tariffs that are currently approved by us. So I'm moving over now to the performance monitoring and enforcement. This is where now we are trying to make sure that these problems that we are completing distribution are kind of minimal. And it's not minimal, because we have to be able to quantify them. We are mandated by the ERA. And we've got the license, both those license conditions, and we've got to do compliance management to make sure that license is according to those license conditions. The conditions that we attach to the license agreement have to do with the number of standards checks, like quality of supply, quality of service, and that the strategic business must be so that we can explain the other thing. There is a big challenge with this budget because we find that in most the business is not perfect, meaning that the money from the electricity business that goes to other business from the municipality, which makes it difficult then to do one of the things that they can't do is not to spend that 6% they have to spend on the electricity business before the commission. We check whether they have maintenance schedules and water plans and integrated development plan. We check whether we provide correct information, because we do receive this default. They come to us. But when we go out there, we have to check what they submitted against what is on the ground. Most applicants right now, we don't have green to application for distribution. As you know, we've got a collective distributor in the municipality, 20 few private distributors. So most of the applications we get on the distribution side of the business are for the amendment of distribution area, or sometimes that is able to manage licensees because of the demarcation board decision. Sometimes licensees want to swap license areas so that they can have contiguous areas of supply. Because as we know, Eskom is distributed too. So Eskom will have distribution lines in the area in one license area, and another in another area. So they swap the area to make sure that they've got one contiguous area. We also have applications for the transfer of one private distribution license lead to local authorities, where those private distributors come out of business and compliance monitoring. So we conduct audits on a manual basis for all these kinds of things in the municipality. And we do this to assess the state of compliance with the commission and to verify the information submitted to us. The team, we've got three teams to audit teams consisting of four people each, and we perform this. Each year we have to perform 12 distribution compliance out of the 100%. That's what we can manage. The auditing process is that we compile an annual program, and we set out questionnaires and notify them that we are coming to the audit. On the auditing phase, on the site visit phase, we discuss the questions because they send the questions back to us, then when we sit down with them, they take the questionnaires themselves, and we don't have to discuss them. We view their documents, development plans, and development plans, check that for the findings of 1860 and we visit the substation. After the audit, we go back to our office and we put the commission in the list, compile all the reports and what is reported to them, and they've got to come back to us and then to see the issue. And after hard again, they must come with the corrective agenda, correcting the things that fall wrong. We approve corrective action plans and we have the right to implement them and monitor them going forward. The consolidated audit report should be found in the letter for each of the municipalities that is audited. This current year, Chair, these are the municipalities we have audited so far, and we are continuing the audit for the current financial year. And these, you will find them, Chair, in the the challenges that we found, as I said, is the fact that the electricity bill is not in the budget. It's not in the budget. The insufficient staff in the department is the lack of asset registers and asset management policies. The lack of asset registers is a problem because we wanted to move away from regulating municipalities through the guidelines, all those things. We wanted to make sure that we look at the market in municipalities, and that costs them and regulate them the way we do that. So, with the rate of return methodology, that requires that we have credible asset prices. So, when we tried to do this, we found that most of them just couldn't get to what they could do as credible asset rate. So what we are doing right now is ask them to do cost of supply studies and trying again to move away from the Islamic way of regulating the benchmark, to say to them, okay, give us your cost of supply studies so that your tariffs can be based on your cost to supply our customers. Right now, we are expecting them to start to feed them from the agency. The new challenge is insufficient funds to undertake the services to the investment project, and they are spending less than their credit. That is quite unfortunate. No master plans to clean up future loads as well. They don't have to load some of them. And they don't have adequate assessments to have carried out for having the future demand. The infrastructure we talk about is very old and decay. Strategic spares and routine spares are not available sometimes in the funding. I think we hear that question sometimes, which is good. They have to start doing that. They will be sometimes good. The benefits of this monitoring exercise is that we believe that it brings to the attention of the community issues that we need to address, and this is a will of our food supply future. Also, it helps them to do self monitoring because they know exactly what it is that they have to look at in terms of the industry standard, and that makes them to be better operators of food networks. In terms of everything, we do everything, and if they don't comply, the question now is, what teeth do we have in them? Section 18 of the ER says that you should put in the tribal bureau and send a notice to find that there's been a contravention of a tribal condition, and set a period during which that should be corrected. If there's no compliance within the period that is set, then it goes to maximum penalty of 10% of the annual retention number of the license fee, or 2 million each day in which that is not appears. These are the keys we have in the relationship. Now, talking about this municipality, we're talking about running sustainable businesses, and then we have to select them with 2 million a day. Something that I don't know whether it can work, but the essence of it is what we can do. When we find them that they are not adhering to the conditions of the license. In conclusion, Chair, we believe that the municipality change that business model can decrease. could generalize on electricity revenues, which would be impacted by the small scale energy change. This is a threat to their state. Already we can see it. Some of them have come to us today asking for a higher interest because we are losing revenue because of the top TV. As you well, TV internet. And also, that also applies to the RCR. So this is something that's not going to stop very soon. I am happy to hear that regulations that are coming up from the DOE are going to address. It's something that we cannot stop, but it's something that I think we should do to make sure that it doesn't cause another disruption. The performance change was hindered by the network system and the municipality. Even if you find them today, you can guarantee that you will find them there. The infrastructure refurbishment and maintenance backlog, meaning, talk about the 27 billion that was established in 2008, but when we had a much of the backlog, and it was established then that it was 27 billion. Yes, now we are talking about over 70 billion. The need to reform the EDI industry, I do believe, problems that were supposed to be corrected by that still exist today. We still have two areas. Municipalities are not financially and technically sustainable. More especially the small ones. So the reform was supposed to create this one big EDI that would make sure that by kind of scale you could take advantage of. In a group to be although the EDI is no longer there, holding is no longer there, I'm just saying to be sitting in this problem that I'm going. Despite the challenges, Chair, I'm happy to say that we are achieving our mandate as a organization of the EDI. But all of this process will continue to try to make sure that thank you very much.
first one, probably comes from slide number 6 about the location, where we make reference to the changes that we see in the location. So the first one is the inherent generation and the impact that we likely have on the municipal community. And the second one, comes from the pilot project, that we have undertaken. If we do the correct things, we are likely to improve the revenue that we have. So that's the second part of the revenue income. And then the other one, which we touched on in our concluding slide, is the Adam program. And then we say we have two important issues. The first is the funding model, and the second one is the governance structure. And the last one is from the question of the funding model.
Thank you. Just a minute. Yeah, I think maybe just to talk a bit more about my own bank. Now it's time for obviously if it is actually determined where to offer it the 2% and it has a 5-year period. But this again comes at a time when South African households and businesses can really not afford, and I say that not afford the incompetence of Eskom, and for them to be rewarded with taxpayers' money. And they have no doubt bound by their mandate and the duty is to find a balance and the interest of all stakeholders in this country. We say that Eskom owes just for a year, their long-term loans is more than 300 billion rand. The interest alone on that is the downgrade more than 100 million rand. All over the world, coal prices went down with 50%, but in South Africa, coal prices went up by 18-20% a year. And I can get into that detail. We've seen it now with the regular payments of the GESA. We've even seen that consulting companies would pay something like 900 million rand, if I remember correctly. I don't know if Mr. Koko bought the work there as well. It's absolutely ridiculous that Eskom can spend the taxpayers' money at this rate. I've seen on the presentation here, on one of the presentations, they employ 15,000 people. That's also not true. Eskom employs. Eskom, actually, as a matter of fact, the loans went up 300%, the complete instability, but the production, the capacity increase was 0% from the 2009. No, there's actually a decline in Eskom. There's no, the Eskom's demand has every 10% that applies to us, to this demand I guess, nobody can afford Eskom's power anymore. And instability, the credit control from the fatalities, you've seen the fatalities are there from 11 billion rand, cable theft, everything. We've seen in Johannesburg now, tunnels were completely cable that was dug up, and all industries, all, I don't know how many thousands of households were without electricity for a week. And this is all in the stability of Eskom. Nobody wants to reward Eskom for this. And at the end of the day, it's the taxpayer that must pay for it. The other one of the entities of this department, what else, the legal opinion that they got said, unaffordability is no reason not to pay bonuses. But this man, this lawyer himself, got 2.5 million man. Can't get performance finance, a bonus. It's going to get this hundreds of millions of rands of bonus. And then we must reward Eskom for this. I really don't know. I think that Eskom requested to be exempted from providing cashless payments in terms of requirements of the minimum information required to act in tariffs. But we need to see it. Never can't make a decision unless we see all the wrongs and the fault that happens in Eskom. I don't even want to mention this famous coal contract. Everybody in South Africa will know what I'm talking about. So we have to look at those things before we spend not our money, the taxpayers' money. Eskom, by the way, doesn't make any profit. Eskom Group, maybe, Eskom and Eskom Development Foundation, between others, also, Eskom Group, more than 800 million in the last year. So they're losing as much as 5,000 gigawatt hours to the less demand Eskom, currently, the consumption, purely from the higher prices and the unaffordable electricity, and the inability for mismanagement to prevent it.
I want to appreciate the commission for the presentation made here in this afternoon. I've just picked up one issue and one issue only, which cut across the presentation. And this issue that you must follow at in a capacity at in our school is a meeting you to a mass part. Someone you must also do. Yeah, try and try until we get it right. Che, this issue is a concern of municipalities not having capacity to run their own affairs. You know,
municipalities rely much on Sardes. And this co Sardes happened to be former employees of that particular company in their majority. Now, I worked for municipality for quite a number of years. What I realized is that you know, there are those people who become artisan helper, these funnel boys. And a bird made the bus, and the bus can say, "Brain permit is funnel, but that is so fast." And the accident doesn't know the size of the span. And when that artisan moves up from the institution and becomes a constructor, the spanner boy is converted into a manager. A manager who does not know what is taking place within the institution. Let me give a practical example, Chairperson. You find that you have a person who was operating water pipe valves, who has now been upgraded to become an engineer. I think the same in different sections of departments, where you need a technical person, where for the technical know-how, where for the experience in running that particular section. Now, I think it is caused by more than one thing. There might be many, but I just wrote down three things. That what which I have alluded to say the project managers leave the institution and become a consultant. And you find that because maybe the municipality do not have the money to employ people with qualifications, then they will take the caretaker, or maybe the person who was working with the qualified person to become that particular person. I mean, to occupy the managerial post. And I think another one is a new employee who is fresh from the school, maybe because in one way or the other that person was able to coordinate for to run as maybe the SRC member at school, in high school or university. For the strikes, and that person is well known in that particular area for personal strikes. And now he or she has joined the institution, now is given that responsibility at that level, at that higher level, a responsibility to run an institution which has to do with the physical environment. So, what do we expect? And all the presentations alluded to that fact that there is no capacity. But what is making from all those findings is the intervention as to whether NERSA, as an intervention, or whether they will have to meet with the COPTA. As I understand, COPTA is responsible for municipality and SALGA. You know, just to come up with a strategy for the intervention to bridge the gap of this lack of capacity. Chairperson, in the municipality, we have the so-called section management. Who is there for quite a long time, but without necessarily having the skills to run that particular department? Because municipality, I believe we all understand that it is for the main section, which together become that particular. So if one leg is walking with a shoe that has, you know, a sole inside, it's a good idea all the time. That person will not get comfortable to wear. That is why the reporting sometimes is not accurate. But last picture, the caucus which was about to be called between the Department of Energy and ESCO. Thanks God that caucus is not there. You know, sometimes the outcome of the caucus may mislead, you know, the role of the oversight player. Now we will come up with a sugar coated to the station, which sometimes does not reflect the reality of the situation. And we appreciate that meeting. Yeah. So that is exactly what we think should happen. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
myself in such a thing. If I were to go to a bank and they needed something to show that I'm able to pay them back, and you are doing the same thing, but at the end of the day, you are still giving me a letter when you know or suspect that I might not be able to meet your requirements, what are we saying today? Are we not in a way because to me, I believe this from the beginning, any person who is supposed to work respectfully for life, if we make sure that if you don't meet the requirements, then you are not successful. Whether at the end of the day, I might suffer because of my time to work. I believe by now, if we had started this thing a long time ago and we are looking for it, some of the problems that we are having now, then I mean, would not be happening. We wouldn't be sitting here and still, you know, every year we have Eskom owns so much, Eskom balance sheet is in. The reason why Eskom is not having money is because the municipality is not paying, the municipality is unable to collect money. This is something we've been saying over and over. I think in every presentation that we have the same complaint. So I'm asking myself, have we not missed the subway in this journey, or some of the things we just take them back and not enforce the investment to enforce that we ourselves have put.
time when you get a similar report, you don't get about the same issues of maintenance of infrastructure. And also the department proposed Adam 2014 drinking model. And I was very much interested because when ESCOM did the presentation, they seem not to, if I can put it in my own terms, agree with them. And I want to agree with the previous speaker to understand what is the risk for ESCOM not in a way agreeing with that proposal. And then in terms of the challenge about the lack of maintenance of this infrastructure, that at the end of the day, the people are going to suffer with the customer if you don't take these things very seriously. With regard to the proposed funding option, without municipalities have to increase tariffs. I agree with you, but now the presentation was not clear as to how much if the municipalities choose to adopt that funding model, how much are they going to pay? So that was not clear in terms of the presentation. And then coming to ESCOM, you know, I'm very much interested when I hear about this learnership, because I believe that jobs are created somewhere for our young people. But why the presentation was not clear as to whether these people, because the presenter said that if on a yearly basis, more than 2,000 learners have been taken through this learnership. But we don't know where they end, whether at the end of the day they are employed or they are placed somewhere else. So I'm very much interested to know the end result. And the ESCOM do not to me mention the problem that the department has already highlighted with regard to municipalities that is lack of skills. So I'm under the impression that ESCOM does not have the problem of people leaving the institution for better opportunities. Is that the case? Because it didn't come out clearly in your presentation. Unlike the Department of Energy, the municipalities, and my colleague has said that those municipalities, they rely on consulting and employing the very same people who used to work for these municipalities. And I think we have to take that very seriously because it means that we are going to sit with a big debt because the department is using the municipalities are spending more money on consulting than to do what they are obliged to do in terms of the constitution. And then in terms of also what is not come clear from ESCOM, much as they spoke about maintenance, but it was clear that ESCOM, of course, they are just on the road. They don't have problems in terms of maintaining their infrastructure. Is that the case, ESCOM? And it also did not come clear in terms of physical connections, whether you are losing money and how much money you are losing with regard to physical connections. And you also mentioned the customer service overview. And my interest was more on the turnaround strategy if customers are coming to you, especially after hours. You think it's positive or you are struggling in that area, what is happening? And coming to NEPA, I only have one question with regards to NEPA. I fully agree. We don't say that municipalities must change their business model to reduce reliance on electricity. My question is, Nelson, do you agree with the Adam Department model that was proposed by the office? And, that is what I said. Okay.
Of small scale embedded generators, which are for the potential of increasing the revenue. So, our
generators, where they get the license and how do they generate or transmit or produce electricity, or are they using another energy form, or are they electricity generators? My question is, do they have the infrastructure, the license? I want to know more about this, because we are told the challenge. The second question, in fact, it's not a question, the issues, the challenges here are not new. There are challenges of lack of skills in the municipalities, the illegal connections we have. These are not new. We are not hearing any tangible strategies on all these issues. Lastly, Chair, I would like to suggest that at some point we have COFTA as well in one of the so that they can respond themselves to all the other issues. Thank you.
Chair, I'll just put a funny up the question to a gentleman from NERSA. NERSA rejected the secret application and gave ESCOM until the end of August to provide information, including the coal volumes. Does this happen? Was the information supplied? Otherwise, this application or increase would be absolutely not in line with good governance and accountability. If it doesn't happen, we can then clearly accept that it's going to sign to hide the inefficiencies and unloaded costs of the consumer if it doesn't happen.
Credit control for municipalities. Yes, credit control is a very good thing. It talks to efficiency of the municipalities. They're not doing it correctly. It reflects as losses. In which case, you've got a benchmark for losses for municipalities. If above the benchmark, then when we come to evaluation of the application, we do take that into consideration. Relative to the guidelines, what should be called now? They are operating in inefficient. So that is taken into consideration. I think you spoke about the coordination, so I will have to talk to you now. You did mention coordination. Let's go apply to coordination and evaluation. And I am happy. They have supplied us all that information. By the time we needed that information, we supplied it and looked at it, and we have agreed that this is supplied in the correct form that we want to see. First of all, before you do that, the credit should be written. But this is one of the challenges we have. One of them is that we find that municipalities don't respect from the electricity business to the other municipality. I think I can speak to the embedded most things. These are people, for instance, who will set up photovoltaics on their roofs, and they use that to generate power for their own use. You can do that in your house. You see it in some complexes, huge complexes. You can go up to 1 megawatt that we installed. That means if they use that for themselves, ESCOM or the municipality will lose that much. Because now, this electricity is now generated by the solar panels. If you go around, there's much more around. Ideas are out there. I'm very happy that the regulations from the DOE will address this because we need to handle further the development of the industry. Oh, okay. That's a difficult one. The distribution line was even before the rest of the world found. As I said, right now, we're not giving any consent to licensing. What we do is deal with license areas, that is, changing the license area and all of that kind of stuff. So we don't do that right now. Because the question that I had, it was like, you issuing license to the next system, so don't register. We are not issuing consent right now. License types are being made. And we are doing monitor for the government to make sure they comply with the license condition that we can produce. And if they don't comply, the finding that I went to section 18, that says that one issue of motion, I send such a page to not comply. If they don't comply by the finding, then we can impose a penalty that can go up to 10% of revenue and 2 million per day. So we are not sure we have to set up. I keep that one to you. I don't find a model. We have not as much to sit down, discuss this. So I don't have to say about it. Make a pronouncement, yes. We need to check that. That is it. But we are aware of funds that moved from the PR holding and transformed to the DOE. But as to the model now, unless we have any action, the regulator has it. So, right here, we can see that. Thank you.
Thank you. This point that the challenges that you are seeing a number of challenges for a number of years, and you don't really see what are the solutions to the problem, and what are we offering on the table. I think I rushed through the presentation because there are 4 slides on active partnering, slide number 22, 23 up to 26, which actually talk about what it is that we are doing from an ESCOM point of view. And the idea is that instead of focusing more on who owns the area of supply and who doesn't, ultimately who actually is disadvantaged would be the customers on the ground. And our approach was that we need to have some active partnering with the municipality, where we work
together on solving the industry issues where we can in collaboration. And this actually culminated into an MOU that we signed in 2014, which was between SALGA and ESCOM to make sure that we provide the support to the municipalities. Some of the support comes in the form of training. We do a lot of training to municipalities that are interested in specific topics like energy losses. In some cases, we teach on tariffs, how to design tariffs for the municipalities. We also had recently a partnership with Electricity the Fund, where they actually came here and they assisted us in putting together a training program so that we can start dealing with the real issues that are challenging both the municipality and the electricity. So in those four slides, I basically just go through the whole concept of what the active partnering is about, and it's really about working in collaboration and dealing with the practical issues that are impacting negatively on our customers instead of spending a lot of energy on the policy issues that we probably don't have much control over. And so there is a lot of that we are doing. And there are other municipalities, just by the way, I think Mongezi alluded to us collaborating on fares. When Johannesburg City Power, for example, has the challenge that they are experiencing at the moment, he and his team actually offer to assist and support where possible. We do this all the time. It is our standard response to the municipalities. But also, there are areas, some smaller municipalities, where ESCOM is actually quite active. We give them operators or with the second staff to go and work as and when required. So we do have a lot of collaborative work that we do with the municipalities. And then talking to the interest, I think the other one was just to explain how the interest reduction works. Normally what happens is when the municipalities bill or when they receive their bill, we give them 15 days in which to pay the bill. If they don't do that, then they start incurring interest. So from day 16, day 17, beyond day 15, in other words, they actually incur interest. And as I explained, our interest rate was prime plus 5%, and it was primarily to discourage them. It was primarily to encourage them to pay in time. That was the whole idea of the interest, as punitive as it is. However, they came to us and they said part of the debt is actually spiraling because of the huge interest that they have to pay. And we agreed then to reduce it from prime plus 5% to prime plus 2.5%. I hope that is a lot clearer. But I think what is also going to assist them now is that they also don't have to pay in 15 days. They have to pay after 30 days of receiving the invoice. So if they pay on day 30 plus 1, then they will have to pay prime plus 2.5%. So that is the concession that we have offered to the municipality. The issue on the illegal connections, what are the solutions? We do have some technical solutions that we have put on the ground. I don't know if I have shared at this committee that we have a technology which we call a split metering, and basically what it is that you get your infrastructure put in an enclosed box which is really inaccessible to the community, and what you do is you split the active part, which is the part where you actually put in your energy that goes into the customer's house, and then you separate it from the one that is either prepaid or postpaid, which is basically just for the consumer to be able to see how much they are consuming, and if you are on prepaid, that you are also able to put in your unit as you buy the unit. So the technology is designed in such a way, we call it split because we're trying to limit the access to the public so that they don't go and connect themselves, into the old boxes that we have. So our technical
solution to illegal connection is actually going the street metering method, and also to make sure that you increase the safety to the public, because obviously when you have small kids that are playing around around illegal connections, it does become a danger to them. So we do have efforts to install this technology to ensure that we reduce only illegal connections. We also, from time to time, go and disconnect the illegal connections. It does become quite a challenge, because when you do disconnect, we do find that we meet up with a lot of resistance. But it is an ongoing process, and sometimes we find that we disconnect today and tomorrow we come back and the illegal connections are back in place. The other side of resolving the illegal connections is to actually electrify people. I think it was mentioned earlier in one of the presentations that the illegal connections also happen because we are not fast enough in dealing with electrification in areas where it is proclaimed for us. I think that's actually quite an important point to make, because electrification is done in areas that are profane. If it's not profane and there are people that are living there, it actually is not allowed that to give them electricity in that case. And then the other question.
Transfer of skills and experience from those people to the younger generation. There's also an issue of skills mix, where technology has changed and we're sitting with people without the prerequisite skills for what we want them to do, and we have to retrain, coach, mentor, and so on. So it is a challenge, but it's not a deal breaker. It's something that we manage. And we actually have got a program on how we do that. And I think that deals also then with the issue of the skills gap, on how we manage that. And maybe on the one of the learners as well, we do take more than what we require. So of the 2,000, we might actually employ 500, 800. And then the others, we work with our suppliers, with our contractors, and with the municipalities to actually promote those skills so that they can be absorbed in the industry. Our view is that we should not just train for ESCOM, but we're training for the industry. But in our industry, we're not growing as much as we actually train. And therefore, there are learners every year that we actually release to other places. The small scale generation or small scale embedded generation, I think NASA has responded to that. One thing I'll just add is that once you've got regulation, at least you know how big this generation is, and therefore you can start doing something about it. Because at the moment, you just see these rooftops happening and you don't know how big the problem is. And secondly, you can also then manage your standby generation approach. Because although they do have these self-generation, when they don't work or they are broken, they're going to come back to your network and draw power from the infrastructure. So technically, you should actually be charging them a standby, because you've got infrastructure that's idling there, waiting for them to actually use it. So once we regulate it, we'll then have a way on how to compensate for that standing infrastructure and also be able, in our planning, to know how big the problem is.
Chairman, I think there are two other questions. There's a customer services question that I forgot to respond
But I think another one, another very important initiative which I omitted to share that relates to the municipal debt is that one of the proposals that we gave to the municipality is to actually do the revenue collection on their behalf. And basically what the proposal entails is that we would find a partner that would help us to install smart meters for them. And then in those smart meters, they will be able to reduce the losses in the municipality so that they can get more money and then be able to give us the revenue. We identified four pilots, two in the Eastern Cape and two in the Free State. There is one in the Free State. All of the four have the council resolution requirement, and what we did manage to get is a council resolution for Pumelela for 2,600 meters so that we can help them to get out of this debt cycle and be able to collect more money. So we hope that by the end of the financial year, we should be able to connect or to assist Pumelela specifically, seeing that they are ahead of the game in terms of getting all their governance and approval requirements. So it is a solution that we believe would work. It is a solution that we believe as both parties from an ESCOM point of view, from the municipality's point of view, we believe that we would be able to get a resolution which is permanent of nature and more sustainable going into the future. And then the second question was around, if I understood it, it was in the customer services area, when we do have queries overnight, do we have a plan to deal with the issues on the day after? I don't know if I understood it correctly. What is our turnaround plan to deal with issues that would have been covered or raised the previous night if we haven't dealt with them the previous night? We do have systems in place. For example, when a customer calls the contact center, the contact center will register customer query, and immediately if it is of a distribution or wires network in nature, it will immediately through the system reflect on the wire side. So they will be able to see that there is a power failure in a particular area. And in that process, they will then be able to dispatch operators to go out and fix it, be it on the same day or on the next day. If it's on the next day, for some or other reason, some of the reasons could be that it is an area that we have flagged as a dangerous area and we would actually prefer to go in when it's light, then it will be flagged so that it can be worked on the first thing in the next day. In some cases, we do have challenges. In fact, there is one challenge that I was looking at day before yesterday, where internally, from time to time, you do have your IT infrastructure breakdown, and you may find that the wires team would not see the fault that was logged. And then the customer keeps escalating, and the wires team doesn't see it because the communication in between has a challenge. So from time to time, that does happen. The internal infrastructure from IT is very similar to the wires or distribution infrastructure, in a sense. So the IT team will look at it and fix it for us so that you can have that mirror happening from the customer service side. So from time to time we would have those issues, but by and large, our systems are really world class and we are able to deal with our customers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are like lords. When they arrive there unannounced,
raised a whole lot of issues around them. So the issue of consultants is a big one, both Eskom and municipalities. And I think the issue of the slow rate of electrification leading to illegal connections, but more than that as well, the fact that in some informal settlements, as a way of we then use off-grid solutions. That also has an impact. So we need to be looking at all these things holistically, I think, to look at them together. But generally, Chairperson, I think we have been finding a way to assist and work together with ESCOM, particularly in the rural areas. So wherever we go, we break ESCOM alone, because that means that mainly the ones in the rural areas, but also because that's the areas where our people are most disadvantaged. The call centers are not within reach, the offices are not within reach, and we've had some unpleasant experiences, which I think as we work together, we try and do them, where somebody doesn't pay, and 2 hours later, they already find the connection fee, and you know, that's unnecessary hassle, but it's really have a major impact on people's lives on a day-to-day basis. And the issues around the high mass life and working on those issues, that's big as well. But I think from a DOP perspective, they ask a few questions, we do the policy, but there's the issues around monitoring and overseeing these and ensuring compliance. And I think that part will be where NERSA comes in quite, needs to come in quite strongly, because they do the licensing, they should be making sure that they compliance around this issue. At some stage, Chairperson, I think we need to come back and get NERSA to educate all of us so that we can engage on this issue of customs, because it's something that Honorable Member has been raising in terms of saying, if the demand is lower, why is the tariff